This episode of For Azeroth is brought to you by our wonderful patrons at patreon.com/Faz. Faz will always be free, but if you enjoy the content we produce, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/Faz. That's patreon.com/FAZ. Everyone, and welcome to For Azeroth, a podcast all about World of Warcraft. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me as always is my co-host, Manny. Manny, how has Azeroth been treating you this week?
Joss, I finally got on the alpha. It was down for a bit, and I was like,
you've been in the alpha for weeks, man.
I know. And you know, it was there, and I would jump in and test some stuff. We've had a pretty good pace, so like every week, pretty much, there's been something new to test, and I was getting accustomed to it, Joss. I was getting accustomed to that nice cadence, and it went down for about a day, right when I was like going to stream, and my entire day was just like, let me in.
that was Thursday, right? That it was down for like ever?
Yeah, it was down for basically 24 hours because they had technical difficulties, and I guess at some point they're like, we're going to come back in the morning and fix this, guys. It's out.
Aw, that sucks. But I'm glad that you've still been able to do some testing. And I think we're going to talk about the latest patch a little bit later on in the show. But before we do, we've got some other news pieces to talk about. So I was actually really happy to see this first news story pop up because Blizzard was one of those companies that kind of like within the first 3 to 4 days of the protest beginning in the States did the whole, you know, black background, white text, like we support blah, blah, blah movements, meaningless. So it was really, really nice to see them actually announce some real action. So they've decided Bobby Kotick is made a personal pledge of $1 million each to 3 programs, putting efforts towards more education and opportunity. And the company itself is going to match staff donations up to $1 million. So we've got $4 million worth of money that has been, I don't know if it's been donated yet, but it's been promised to, I guess.
Yeah, it was a pledge. My understanding was that there was the pledge to donate $1 million for the 3 different charities, and then there was a further pledge to match the staff donations from both, again, Bobby Kotick and Activision Blizzard. So if up to $1 million, so if the staff donated $1 million or higher, then
Blizzard,
Activision
would match
Blizzard
it. Yeah,
would put down $1 million, and Bobby would put down a further $1 million, and that was okay. What made up the $4 million.
Okay, I thought he had, because it was the United Negro College Fund, Equal Justice Initiative, and Management Leadership for Tomorrow were the 3 charities. And I thought it was $1 million to each of those. But I think you're right. I read it wrong.
Yeah.
But those are the 3 charities that they're supporting anyways, with up to $4 million. Or I guess over $4 million, because Blizzard is going to match staff donations up to $1 million. So if staff donate like $1.7 million, then that'll be $2.7 million. So they could, in theory, depending on the generosity of Blizzard staff, they could hit more than $4
million. Well, all of Activision Blizzard, it's not just Blizzard. It can
right,
be like
yeah,
King
sorry.
And all of the
yeah,
companies
true.
In there.
Yes, true. Yeah.
Which makes it more likely that they'll hit, which is why I'm like actually happy that it's the full umbrella for this one.
Yeah, because I mean, Blizzard, as much as like we love them and they're this huge gaming company, they're not that like the individuals who work there. I think their staff isn't huge. We're not talking thousands and thousands and thousands of people, right? So I think expanding it to the whole company, you're right. There's a much higher chance instead of putting it on those like 800 people or however many staff there are at Blizzard. Like that's a big financial burden for a small amount of people. But yeah, you're right. Being the whole entire company makes a big difference.
Yeah. And as you said, like, this is them literally putting their money where their mouth is, giving action towards this. I really do like that it is for, like, educational and opportunity things, because I think that helps at lifting people up and giving them those opportunities so that they can make a better life, not for just themselves, but for future generations. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that those are the charitable donations that they're putting forward.
Agreed. So Manny, do you want to tell me a little bit about Maldraxxus?
Yes. So Blizzard put out the last covenant and the last leveling zone with the Maldraxxus preview. This is the same as the Ardenweald preview that we covered in our last episode. Mm-hmm. It shows a bit about the zone, which obviously isn't as pretty as Ardenweald, but
it reminds me of? It reminds me a lot of Argus. It's giving me, like, with that, like, slight, like, green tinge to everything. There's a lot of, like, bare rock and like, bones and stuff. And it's giving me some Argus vibes.
Yeah, like,
Mixed with maybe Zangarmarsh? I don't even know. Like,
I would say the Zangarmarsh thing is a good hit. If you've been to, like, Eastern Western Plaguelands, it feels like a world based on that, where there okay. is some vegetation, right? There is some kind of life. It's not just like completely barren desolate. Waste of desolate that Argus was, right? There is grass growing. There's a lot of fungus, obviously, because it's the rot and everything. And so I would say that, yeah, if you've been to Eastern Plaguelands, or if you don't remember Eastern Plaguelands, go ahead and go there on your in the game right now. And it's like that ratcheted up to 11. Mm. The architecture is that scourge sort of bone thing. Like,
yeah, there's lots of bones. This is Bone Town. Yeah.
this is Bone Town. Creatures feel like the Scourge abominations and liches and all of that. And what we see, obviously, because they said that Scourge is sort of based on the afterlife, mm-hmm. right? This seems like the most direct of the base level Scourge setup. And so then what we're seeing is that, yeah, like, this is where the Lich King sort of drew his power from. For the military might of the Scourge. What really is cool about this is that each of the different things are in a house. It's kind of like that Game of Thrones thing where there are these houses vying for power. There are the liches that are part of the houses of rituals, and everyone knows, like, the necromancy and the magic of the liches. They're cunning and everything. They've got the abominations, but these abominations are not, like, just random stitched together parts. They're kind of this macabre purity where they take the best of these specimens and create something more.
And that's the House of the Constructs, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then there's, like, the big old, like, army warrior champion dudes that are House of the Chosen, right?
Yeah. And I think these are best reflected as, like, the Verkul, the ones that were in Northrend that were the giant humanoids.
Oh, right? Yeah. Okay.
But obviously... again, ratcheted up to 11, where they just seem like these complete powerhouses. And those are the gladiators. And then the poison ooze sort of things, those are from the House of Plagues. And then we have the Aranak, which are spider people. So they're based off of the Nerubians, right? And those are the House of Eyes.
So all of these houses are kind of like vying for control of the zone?
Kind of, because what we find out when we reach there is that not all is well, and two of the houses have fallen to the conflict already. And so it's pure chaos in there. The last of the three houses are fighting, and the leader of all of the realm, the Primus, is mysteriously absent.
Okay. Interesting.
Right? Yeah. And so
I love, if you guys haven't gone and looked at the preview of the zone, the Plague House remnants look so cool because they're like the oozes, but standing upright with like arms and legs instead of just being a puddle. So they've got like a full like skeleton inside them. They're such a cool design. I really like those.
That's one of the designs. That seems more the like bruiser beater one that they have in the preview, mm-hmm. but they have ones that seem more spellcraft casters, and that completely turns it on its heads, because when you think of these oozes, you never think of something intelligent. But if you've got something that is more of a spellcaster version, makes you wonder a bit. So they've definitely built on all of this and shown not just a straight elevation of like power, but also new twists on them. Like when you look at the Aranak, they're different than the Nerubians, and they're like assassins and scouts and spies and like counter espionage, which mm-hmm. is a completely different tune on it. And each of these houses has a role to fill in the general part, but again, now they're fighting against each other in that power vacuum, which of course we're going to find out it has been caused by the jailer and his agents to like destabilize it.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the power of the Covenant, because I feel like the Maldraxxus power is the one that a lot of people have been talking about in terms of like, this just seems awesome for raiding, for Mythic Plus specifically. Like, this fleshcraft power seems nutty. So this is basically the ability to form a shield of flesh and bone that prevents damage equal to a portion of your maximum health and standing near the corpse of a defeated enemy, hence why this would be awesome in Mythic Plus, is because you've got so many trash dudes, when the ability is cast, creates a larger shield. So you basically, like, take the bones and flesh of your enemy and wrap yourself in it to give yourself higher health.
Yeah. And part of the reason that this one has been singled out as like, whoa, what's going on here, is because we're operating on a completely different vector than all the other ones. All the other ones are movement abilities. You turn into a familiar as you're part of the Night Fae, and you get to run around and have a
unicorn.
Smaller... Whatever your familiar may be.
No, I think you just said you get to turn into a unicorn. Come on now.
Okay. And it reduces your aggro range, right? With the Venthyr, you get to do this sort of teleport, kind of like Reaper in Overwatch, where mm-hmm. you like disappear into the shadows and reappear in the distance. With Bastion, you get a helper that shows up, so it's not really a movement ability. It just gives you like a little potion by default, and that potion can do different things. But this one is a defensive cooldown.
Yeah.
So if you're in PvP, it's a defensive cooldown. If you are going up against a raid mechanic that a lot of people are dying on, it's a defensive cooldown. If you just need to like give yourself extra health so that you're not dealing with stacks of wound, I'm forgetting the name of the wound, gratuitous wound or something, that will give you a health buff, right? A barrier too, so that you don't get the stacks. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things that are at work there, especially since there are places where there will be corpse aplenty when you're going between trash packs and Mythic Plus. If you have any raid boss that like summons waves of adds, and you're like, okay, the waves of adds are dead, everybody get their big shield.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ways that this can be implemented in any PvE scenario, not to mention that anything that increases your effective health in PvP is very strong.
Yeah.
So that's why people have the fear about this one. Obviously there's other abilities that are attached with it, and that goes into the math of it, but unless the other abilities are by default weaker, or this one cannot be used in instance content or whatever, there's already a balance issue that you have to address.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you address it by changing this one or kind of buffing the others. Like if you say turn into your familiar and you're immune for 3 seconds or something, or, you know, like and make those available to you all the time. And, you know, what was the other? Oh, yeah. The summoning the dude to help. That's kind of like a damage, or could be like a damage cooldown. But even then, like, I don't know. This just seems like, as if I put my, like, I'm a Joss Raider hat on and I like to also do PvP, then I feel like I have to pledge myself to Meldraxxus because this is just going to be such a powerful ability. But if I put my I'm Joss and I'm a secret unicorn hat on, then I'm like, well, clearly we all know what covenant I belong to. So I guess it's just which Joss hat is going to win out in the end. And you guys know it's going to be unicorns.
And we'll definitely talk about that that torn decision, that being pulled in two different directions in a listener question that we're going to cover later. But that is just sort of the way that people are looking at it. By way of the storyline, and by way of like what the covenant looks like, I have only played a little piece of this, but this covenant really speaks to me just because I love the political intrigue. Like, it's
that does
not
sound like an interesting story for sure. Like learning more about the different houses and how they're going to kind of fight against each other in a vacuum of power. Like, that's a very, I mean, it's been told 100 times, but it's an interesting story, which is why it's been told 100 times. So I'm totally there with you. But yeah, you're never gonna pull me away from my Night Fae.
Yeah, so I'm very glad for that. When
also,
they
this
first
armor
announced
looks like that.
When they first announced the different covenants, Meldraxxus seemed the most straightforward and flat one to me, so I wasn't really looking forward to it. But from this preview, from what I've seen, they've made this currently the one that I'm most interested in, and I'm very happy for that. But yeah, Joss, you were talking about the armor, and we did get to see all 4 sets. So it's visual. We're not going to go too deeply into it. But as you expect, there's a lot of bone on this.
There's so much bone. Oh, my God. God, like, literally, guys, bones everywhere. Everywhere in this zone. Bones, bones, bones.
Bones, bones, bones. And they're spiky. And
they got
they're
some glowy
like
bits.
They've got glowy bits. And I think the one that I like the least, if I had to pick all of them, is the leather set. It has like one arm hanging off one of the shoulders. It just looks weird.
It does look kind of weird. I was going to say my least favorite is probably the male version. That one just looks kind of boring compared to the plate and cloth versions. The cloth has these really cool, like, wingy, like wing bones without like the flesh in between them to make them actually wings. Like, it looks kind of cool. And then, but yeah, you're right. The leather one with the arm off the side, it's a cool idea to have like an extra bony hand, especially I'm assuming that there's some movement to it, whether it's like just flopping there or whether it's like reanimated. Either way, there's probably some movement to it that makes it pretty cool, but it's in a really weird and awkward place, especially since they chose to showcase it on a dwarf, because it's like the shoulders are so big in comparison to the character that it's like all the rest of the armor pieces create this very like cohesive shape. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it's just like extra arm, like out the side for no reason. It's so weird.
Yeah. And the helm also has that sort of like half and half thing where half of it has spikes coming out the end and the other half doesn't.
Yeah.
I think it's just a weird sort of mix. It does definitely make me want the transmog your shoulders independently. So maybe I can copy over like and have two
the
arms
left shoulder
or
and put
no
that
arms.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I agree. Because yeah, you're right. It does look, it looks odd. And I think that they were going for like a split down the middle style, but it doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's just me.
So what's the one that you feel is the least favorite? Are you agreeing with me on the leather here?
I like the idea of the leather. I think the male is more boring.
Oh, okay.
Like that, and I don't generally like male armor at all. And, you know, having a hunter as my main for so long, it was just always so frustrating because I'm like, oh, this looks dumb. This looks dumb. Look at all the cool things that clothies get to wear. Look at all the cool things that plate wearers get. And male always felt like they didn't know what to do with it. And they've kind of continued that with this set, I think, because they're just like, I don't know, give them a skull for a belt. Done.
Okay. So, and then you were liking the cloth
I
one
like
is
the cloth
the best?
And then the plate, yeah.
Okay. So yeah, the plate one for me seems the best. And I think part of it is the effect. So the glowing that like spins around the shoulders, I think is just really cool.
Well, and that looks like a cohesive piece because your shoulders are both the same and the spikes on the shoulders match the helm. So that just kind of all together looks like a more interesting armor piece to me than especially the leather and the mail one. The cloth again is a symmetrical look and it looks cohesive, but the other two are, they're just weird, man. But Maldraxxus is also the covenant that is not necessarily going to just appeal to me from an aesthetic point of view. So I'm not surprised that I don't really like their armor.
Their mounts look amazing, and you don't see that in the official preview, but if you go check out on Wowhead sometime, they've got bone chimeras, like two-headed dragons.
Okay.
They've got just like their ground mount looks really phenomenal. So there's some cool stuff in there when you get away from, I think the armor in general is pretty weak unless you're like plate. I think that's the one that I think is good, and the rest of them are like not that good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, I am looking forward to it though, because you get to play through all of the covenants, at least like the base story, right? When you're going through the zones and leveling up, like you don't have to actually make your choice until later on.
That's correct. Yeah. You'll be going through them one at a time. Maldraxxus is going to be the second level. Second realm that you level through.
Is this expansion going to be like the opposite to what we've seen in Legion and BFA, in that it's going to have an actual cohesive story and you don't get to just choose what zone you want to go to? It's like everyone's going to take the same leveling path through these four zones.
Yes.
Good.
The story goes through the four zones. But when you play on an alt, you get to break from that and you can go to any zone in any order you want after you've leveled through it first, the normal way, the recommended path.
Yeah, like what I really missed in the last two expansions was a cohesive leveling story, because each zone had their own story and they wrote some pretty good zone stories, but it didn't necessarily feel like it was feeding into a larger cohesive story, particularly when they split apart into Kul'Tiras and Zandalar in BFA. In Legion, at least, each zone story was like, okay, we need to go to this zone, we need to get these people on our side, and then we need to get one of the five key things that we need, and then we need to take those to Dalaran so that we can, you know, continue on the story. So that kind of made sense to be split into five zones, and it didn't really matter which order you did them in, because each one of them ended with a relic that we needed to collect. And then once we had five relics, then things moved on. But in BFA, it was just kind of like, oh, these guys are doing stuff over here, these guys are doing stuff over here, this is happening over here. Like, oh, guess what? We've got a raid that half of the players don't even know why we're going there. I think having a zone by zone cohesive story that each player sees at least one time is really important to just the cohesiveness of storytelling in the expansion, which they really, really screwed up in BFA.
Now, I am a little bit worried, not to go too much into spoilers, because the way that you go through at least Bastion is that the story kind of has a split, because they lead you into going to Maldraxxus, but they also set up the main adversary that they're going to, I suspect, face against in the Covenant campaign. And so when you drop the main adversary, the Forsworn, to deal with Maldraxxus, that plot point is left floating. And if if it's completely left for people who don't deal with the Bastion Covenant, that might be a sort of disconnect in the storyline. So I'm unsure about it. I hope that it's wrong, but like right now from what I've played, yeah, the Forsworn are like built up, and then you just sort of go like, oh, what's this over here, and then go running off and never come back.
So like, you think that there could be or should be a few more quests at the end to kind of wrap that story up,
to at least delay the Forsworn so they don't seem like the imminent threat that was constantly building.
Okay.
It sort of makes sense, because Bastion seems like their downfall is going to be their pride. Mm-hmm. But again, as we like know more about the story, maybe it'll fit together, but it's just a concern I have on my alpha play.
So speaking of the alpha, we got a new build this week as well. Build 34714, for those of you keeping track, is now up on the alpha. So what's changed here from last week when we were talking about alpha builds?
So of course we just talked about Maldraxxus and that being in, so that's the big centerpiece to this new update. But we've also seen some really cool spell animations go in. So previously we had talked about how they changed the armor sets for each of the classes to something that was a little more evocative of each of the classes. But now when you are creating your character, you're seeing them kind of like exemplify what they're supposed to be. So of course we have a link in the show notes that shows stuff to the character creation, but you're seeing like a priest floating with like holy power in their hands. You're seeing a death knight with the bone armor flying around them, ready to fight. And it just gives you a feel of like what your class is embodying at the high end when you reach the top level, right when you're starting your character creation.
So and it's a is this character creation stuff gonna show us? Like, is this all spell effects and things that are in the game at the higher levels?
Yes.
So like, because I looked over it and like this, the fire mage like floating with all of the fiery effects around him, like, oh my god, that looks so cool. I want to be a fire mage now.
Well, the priest is the only one that floats. So that's a mix of levitate plus power infusion.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Levitate, power infusion. But the mage has like the brilliance above their head, flames coming out. The rogue is like translucent to show kind of the stealth sort of thing going, right?
The fiery looking effects, I was like, what is happening here?
Holy fire.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Of course, like, yeah, the shaman with the lightning shield around them. I like that some hunters have guns and some hunters have bows. It is completely based on like your own aesthetic, which one you like better. But like for me, I like the bow. I like the bow look, the very determined, like, I'm ready to take you down sort of thing.
Me too. Did they show any hunters with, like, pole arms? Or?
No. What you will find. I mean, each of the classes, they can only represent one of the specs, really. And sometimes they try to do something that is showing multiple specs. So, like, for Paladin, Ret Paladins get the shaft because they have a shield and a mace, but that could be protection or it could be holy. Mm-hmm. For hunters, as you said, right, there's no hunter with a pole arm, so you're really not seeing survival being shown. We talked about like how cool those priests look, but that's not representing shadow.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, that's barely, I don't even think that's really representing holy. I mean, that looks like discipline at best.
Yeah,
but like I said, it looked like a mage to me. It looked like a super OP fire mage who was just floating around and getting ready to fireball my face.
But it gets you jazzed. It really does hype those classes where you're looking at it and you're like, oh, I want to get to that point. I will say, if you get to the Death Knight, bone armor needs like a bit of a graphical update, because it looks little basic, like little basic.
Yeah.
But it's a small touch, but it adds so much. So I definitely wanted to mention that. In addition to that, we have seen some big reworks and some smaller reworks to classes. Warlocks got some baseline changes, specifically focusing on affliction. They got a spell baselined, which I think was really necessary, because before this, warlocks took like 6 seconds per demon that they wanted to summon. It's a huge, long cast. And so if you had a demon drop in the middle, you were pretty vulnerable while you're like trying to get this off. So they got a cooldown in there that can reduce the summon every so often to like 0.5 seconds. So helps good quality of life thing. And they also did some stuff with the curses and that, so that they work better with the various classes. So because curses are being brought back as a utility thing for them. And I think it's really cool. Mages, going on from their changes, and this was mostly focused on fire mages and their ignite stacks being changed. That's being adjusted so that it works a little bit better. They also had some talent adjustments. They still haven't fixed the ignite problem that they introduced when they made the change. So fire mages are absolutely broken. I won't go too deeply into that because I don't expect to go live. And then, of course, they did some small quality of life changes for Blood and Unholy Death Knights, increasing the length of certain abilities, the duration of certain abilities, and removing Rune Tap from the GCD. So people who are saying, hey, let's get some stuff off the GCD, if you have a good reason, right, they will do that. Rune Tap became baseline. They thought to balance it being baseline, they put it on the GCD. The community gave a reasoned argument why it should not be on the GCD. They've listened. So that's off the GCD.
I always like to hear that, you know, the community is like, this feels bad, we don't like it. And they're like, oh, okay, we'll change it.
Yeah.
That's what the alpha should be for.
And that's what it is. And I'm really glad to see that we are seeing these things, like input being received and acted upon. And I'm really glad to see that. That's what we wanted from a testing phase, like an alpha, beta, or PTR. So yay, Blizzard. The big change it comes in the form of Shaman. The DPS specs for Shamans have seen some significant reworks. Enhancement saw the biggest, and Elemental saw some smaller ones. This is...
Which one are you again?
I bounce between the two, but like primarily I'm enhancement. This shows sort of like the good and the bad of reworks. For Elemental, they didn't receive as much of a rework, but what they did was they sort of decoupled their AoE and their single target. So whereas before everything built to Maelstrom, they then added in the stacks of Fulmination and the stacks of a different buff that were for single target and for AoE. And that meant that they didn't really work together. But then they also shifted the focus to fire, to Lava Burst. And what's happened is that each of those parts are sort of fighting against each other. And that's a really weird thing that Blizzard is going to have to look at, but it's alpha iteration. And I think there are stuff that can do it. I think, as I've been testing on the talents, you can find ways to either make it work or focus purely on something so that you could ignore the other stuff almost 90% of the time and it works. Enhancement has gone the completely opposite way. They've moved everything into this sort of synergies. And so I'm in love. I love it. Honestly, when I made a post on the forums and I was listing off stuff that I was concerned about, they've addressed all of that and more. So I'm a happy camper for enhancement.
Good.
But yeah. But this is what the alpha is about. You are looking at not the numbers, because there's still some weird things with the numbers, but the way things play and the feel of it, and you can get a very enjoyable setup in the alpha. When we get into numbers tuning, it's going to be too late there. And this is, again, Blizzard seeing the feedback, reacting to the feedback, and getting a much better iteration when they get to it. So if you are on a spec and you're reading that, hey, Blizzard has been ignoring me, that's not true. They're going through different classes, getting these iterations out. I really did love that at this time they have actually put through sort of a developer's notes on each of the class changes, and those are in the notes. So if one of these classes is something that you are interested in, go ahead and read through those. They're in the show notes, and you can see where they're coming from and what they're trying to do with each of these classes.
I love when Blizzard or any company puts out notes that actually say, we made this change because blah, and actually gives some insight. I mean, for a long time there, I felt like the Heroes of the Storm team was one of the only places I was actually seeing it, where it's like, such and such a change, we gave them 0.5% more damage on this ability, and it seems like a ridiculous, like, minute change. But then when you get the dev notes alongside that, and they're like, oh, we needed to do this because that helps it align better with this, and it makes this feel better, and we didn't like how this was playing, and this is now, you know, fix the issue. It's like, just makes such a big difference as a player of that game, because then you start to see the direction that the dev team is taking and what they consider to be fun and what they consider to be important. And it helps you as a player then understand, you know, what kind of feedback you need to give, or, you know, if the devs are even like moving the game towards a game that you are going to enjoy. And I think it's, oh man, it's just so much more helpful when they give actual insights into changes instead of just saying, hey, this changed by this random small number. It's like, okay, thanks. Yeah. That doesn't really mean anything.
And it's especially true in the world of data mining. People who would just like look at like the data mine thing and be like, what's going on, might have felt that like enhancement received a huge nerf, because they're like, oh my goodness, all this baseline damage of all these different abilities got nerfed. But then you might skip over the fact that, hey, when utilized with this, it's actually generally a buff if you're playing this right, and this is the way they intend it to be played. And that will completely change your understanding of what they're doing. And I think that that's why developer insight and developer notes is so important.
So there's one other change with PvP, right, that they're kind of on the fence about?
This is data mining. Okay. Again, we you have to take this with a bit of a
grain of salt.
Yeah. So they have a tooltip and a hook for PvP spell power. This is, or PvP power. This is a element that was in the game before. Basically, it would increase your primary stat based on a factor of how much PvP power you had. And that would allow you to scale in a very linear way, but would be very strong, especially at the beginning of expansion, where your primary stat is really powerful. But it's also something that doesn't mean that it's something that other players wouldn't have. So everybody has their primary stat. It's not like it's resilience or anything like that. It's just there. It's not hooked up to anything. We don't know. It could be a vestige of something they tried and are already done with it. It could be something that is coming in. It just so happened to be data mined in that and has raised a couple of eyebrows. Ian has said previously in the last time he did an interview that there wasn't going to be PvP specific stats or armor, but just like they were able to go back and say, you know what, we are going to have high elf customization for players, they could go back and say, you know what, this is something worth exploring. Whether they end up or not, we don't know. Hopefully there'll be a developer talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing is that we have seen yet more customizations come out. We had already talked about last episode how you can do, there are threads in there to customize druid forms. and that is now in the game. You can, or sorry, rather in the alpha, you can take your druid to a barbershop and change whatever druid form independently. It's no longer sets. So that's amazing.
Yeah. But, so this means that basically, like, you can go in and you can say, okay, for my aquatic form, I want this. For my travel form, I want this on the ground. And then I want this in the air, right?
Yeah.
That's super
all independent
fun.
Of glyphs. So that is really awesome. And then the last thing is that they have thrown in the Tauren customizations now. So Tauren got their love this time, and it's great. It's like they have tribal markings that you can put in there. They have like nearly double the patterns of fur and skin tones in there. They have added in so many levels of customizations. You could even do bangs on Tauren's now.
Well, you know, that was the big thing that was missing in my World of Warcraft experience was bangs on my Tauren.
It is. You could have like the black mane, the like bangs cover your eyes. And then you know what you got? You got a goth cow. You've got an emu.
Get out.
And I'm done with this story now.
All right, then we'll get into some community resources and add-ons. And this week, Manny, we are talking about audio cues. Tell me about this.
Yeah. So this one is a little more abstract, but basically, sound is a big part of the World of Warcraft. It's something that's often ignored. It's something I really ignored until I started playing a different game with my friends, Dead by Daylight, which is very much an audio-focused game. And then coming back to WoW, I realized that there was a lot of audio cues that the community in general and myself ignore, right? This is stuff that when you're raiding, even if you don't have DBM, you can tell what the boss is doing. You have like that alert ahead of time. And it really helps because as we're tracking more and more things, we've got all the stuff that we have to deal with in these very complicated raid encounters. We've got Mythic Plus and all these different packs that we deal with. And in PvP, we're like literally it is a dance of plays and counterplays to try and like outfox your enemy. Keeping track of that, and if it was all visual on your screen, would get very cluttered, very noisy, very hard to discern. So being able to use a different sense stops the one sense from having like a bit of sensory overload sort of thing. So this is options that are in all parts of the game. I already talked about when you're dealing with like the boss or raid add-on. So that's like DBM, that's GTFO, that is Bigwigs. They have voice modules, they have countdowns, they have various sound settings so that you know something is coming up. You could have in the middle of a battle, you could flag an ability so that when it's coming up, you could have a countdown. It'll be like in the middle of fight being like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So you know to be prepared for that. And you can set that up based on each encounter. You can have different voices for different things as well. You can also set the stuff up in weak auras, so you can have it very much custom to yourself. Weak auras too has that ability. I had a friend who set up a weak aura that whenever they did sprint as a rogue, a little song would play, and that song would last the entire duration of the sprint and then cut out when sprint went. So he never had to go like, oh, is my sprint still on? He would know roundabout where the song was, how long he had. He would never have to check.
That's like, okay, partly awesome, but at the same time, I feel like it would be super annoying. And I don't know how often you use sprint as a rogue, or like, does he have the same song playing all the time because it's an ability that he's trying to keep up? Like,
you could do it for abilities you keep up. You could also do the inverse. You could have the sound only play when you're missing the ability. So if you need to keep up a buff on yourself or a buff on somebody else, if you're trying to keep your demon spikes up as much as possible, or know when you don't have your demon spikes to refresh it or use another defensive, you could have like a little ping go off when you're missing that buff. So it'd be like the demon spikes would fall off and it'd be like beep, 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 something that isn't super loud or obnoxious. It's not going to be like air horns going off, but it would be like a little.
You need your spikes.
Right?
There, you now you guys can cap that and use that.
There you go. And you can actually do that. If you want to cap Joss going off like that, that's something you could do.
Oh my God. You could use, if you were a fire mage and don't they have that ability that like procs that they do a whole bunch of damage? You could use my so hot. Every time you get your proc.
There you go. You now have something for your hot streak.
Hot streak. That's it. Yeah. Oh, you're welcome, guys.
And there are add-ons that have it already built in. Way back on our first episode from the reboot or relaunch, we had talking about all the things, which was a collection sort of stuff. And so whenever you get a new thing, a little chime can go off. So you know, oh, this boss that I just looted, there's something new that I wanted in here. Or whenever you get BOEs, you could have an alert go off so that you just loot, grab stuff. You don't hear anything. You just move on, right? Or it could be something like Rare Scanner, which is another add-on we talked about. And that has alerts when you are near treasure chests and a different alert when you are near rares. So for me, when I am hunting like my rares that I want to get the mounts, I could literally alt-tab, not even look at the screen, and then hear the alert and know that I need to come back to the game to kill the rare that I'm after. So in that way, you can have valuable information presented to you in a way where your eyes don't need to be focused on something and can be otherwise doing something else. It could be a complete multitasking. You could be working on through on your rotation, Earthquake starts going off, quaking for Mythic Plus, and boop, you get an alert and you're like, oop, I need to stop casting or I need to get away from my friends. That is an easy way to get the information to you that you will easily get used to and doesn't take up the real estate on your screen. So you could have a very minimalistic UI and still have a lot of information coming your way. And
there's like for like weak auras specifically, there's probably going to be somebody who's already built a weak aura to do the thing that you want to do. So if there's something that you want to track, you can go and find it. And then you can always change like sound settings and what the actual alert is that they're using. But it's not going to take nearly as much setup as some of these other ones. And even then, I think Rare Scanner is super easy to change as well in terms of what sounds are doing what. So probably the bigger ones like the DBMs of the world take a little bit because you have to kind of go into each and every fight and decide like how you want to be notified. So there's a lot of changes that need to be made, but then it's like a set it and forget it, right? Like that's the whole point of audio cues in general, is that like you set it up so that when you hear the sound, eventually you train yourself to know what that sound means. So
I think the DBM one is also something that people might discount, but if you are in a fight and it's always this one ability that gets you, that's exactly the right thing to get the audio alert. You're like, oh my goodness, this ability is going off. I want the countdown for this, or I want the chime to go off for this, or I need her to announce this in a different voice than everything else. So when I hear that voice, I know to pay attention. And if you make that one voice the, I need to pay attention to this, then you can set that for whatever important ability shows up in any fight from now on, and you will automatically have that level of reaction because you know that you have set that ability for this voice. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the last thing is the base game. There are so many different things. I put like a quick list of things that like I pay attention to. I'm running around in a zone and I hear that supply plane fly over. I start looking up, right? I am playing against the boss or any kind of encounter, and the boss says a certain phrase that I know is attached to a nasty ability. I know to start booking it or use the defensive or whatever. I know to react because the bosses do have particular phrases that they use with certain abilities. Raid cooldowns, we all know the sound when heroism or bloodlust or time warp goes off. We know those sounds. So some of we us know don't to start.
Know what heroism sounds like because we're not.
Those are good people, but we're not going to talk. No. Alliance are good people, and I have many alliance friends. Uh-huh. So we will talk. We will say heroism is definitely something that that people know and react to, and then you know to like start popping your potions and going through.
I'm just teasing you guys.
Yeah, and then of course quest failures. There is that like little ding that goes off. And if you do that, you know you failed your quest. You know to stop trying to farm something else or like fighting these next little things because little Joey that you were supposed to be escorting has met a grisly end. You know to go back and restart it.
Oh, man. Who fails an escort quest?
I don't know. Maybe you're doing an Iron Man. Maybe you got caught up in a PvP battle, and while you were trying to kill like Ronnie Horde guy who ganked you, or Joey Alliance who just decided to start a fight with you, we just had your little escort guy meet his end, and so you know, okay, I got to finish this fight and go job. Restart. You had one job and it wasn't to pick the fight with this guy.
Yeah. But
at least you know.
Well, thank you so much for talking through audio cues. I think it's something that is overlooked quite often in just gameplay in general. And it's funny that you mentioned Dead by Daylight, because that's definitely what made me start to pay more attention to sound design in Warcraft was after playing Dead by Daylight, where you're listening to anything from sound cues that might tell you when your opponent is doing something to breathing and footsteps. Like there's so many small audio cues in Dead by Daylight that when I came back to WoW and raiding in particular, I mean, I was raid leading and I wasn't really paying attention to like the built-in boss emotes. And I was relying so much on the DBMs of the world. And I've noticed that when I came back and started healing, it actually helped me quite a lot paying attention to sound because I'm spending so much time focused on like my team's health bars, right? So knowing that there were the boss emotes in the game, it's like it made me a better healer because even though I wasn't really paying too much attention to a whole bunch of abilities, I was watching health bars. It would let me know when like a big AoE thing was coming. So I would know what abilities to use to help heal the raid and, you know, or if there was, you know, some targeted stuff or some get out of the poop on the floor stuff, all of that usually has voice lines and paying attention to that made me a much, much better player. So thank you for sharing, Manny. That was a great little community resource.
Yeah. And the reason that I mention it now is that we're reaching the end of the expansion. It is a good time as you've got some downtime to like reassess your UI, see if you can like clean up the clutter a bit, and using audio to get that, get some information to you might allow you to have like a nice, clean, easily readable UI that will help you into the next expansion.
That brings us to our email section today. We've got two. You can send in emails to fazpodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit us up in the Discord. We just created a channel called Questions for the Show where you guys can actually put questions so I don't miss them, because we have a very active Discord. And if you guys ask questions for the show, most of the time they're buried by the time I get around to it. So we have a brand new text channel there that you guys can drop your questions if you would like to send them into the show, just like Buckweister did, who says, what kind of WoW crossover would you like to see? Illidan visiting Tom Nook in Animal Crossing, or insert other non-Blizzard IP in WoW? This question is interesting because WoW already does so many pop culture references, and a lot of it is like Easter egg kind of stuff, because like my first gut reaction was like, oh, I want to be Zelda. I'm going to be Zelda in WoW. And I'm like, there already was some Zelda in WoW. And I think it was at Un'Goro Crater way back in vanilla. There was like a Zelda themed quest line. I never actually got to play it, so.
I'm blanking on that, but I would assume that there's been so many different references. I constantly remember the ones that become quite larger. Like they have, It's Harrison Jones? No.
Harrison Jones is like the Indiana Jones dude.
Yeah. Harrison Jones, right? Who was like in a number of different zones right up to Oldham, I think is the last time we saw him. And I guess they've sort of focused more now on Bran Bronzebeard since, but we have had him like running through a temple with like an entire boulder chasing him and the entire like snakes. Why did it have to be snakes? So there's constantly those sort of like crossover things. I would think of like Blizzard properties outside of Blizzard would be very cool. Seeing something like Garrosh Hellscream in a fighting game like Soul Calibur, because they used to do a bunch of crossovers, would be very interesting.
We have seen like Tyrande and Illidan over in Overwatch, right? Because they did skins, which is obviously like cross promotion within Blizzard itself. But like, I would be totally down for like Blizzard skins in other games for sure. Like, one of the first things that I went to go do in Animal Crossing was try to make myself a Horde logo t-shirt. I failed. Pixel art is really hard, you guys. Especially pixel art with a controller on a video game.
I will link you. Somebody has done a bunch of class designs and the logos in Animal Crossing. So I'll send you those links. I think there's codes for that. So
okay, I'll make sure that I put those in the show notes then, because I know, oh man, I had a really hard time. And then you get like halfway through and you realize like you've run out of space or something, or like it just won't fit. And then it looks all like slanted and weird. And anyways, yeah, pixel art is hard. But in terms of, I don't know, like a lot of what is in my head is kind of like skins that I'd like for my games. Like, I would love if I could make my hunter look like Aloy from Horizon. I would love being able to play as a character. Actually, I think I would really like to play as like a Link type character in WoW, except for the problem is he would be so OP because he'd have like all of the like shield and sword abilities of like warriors, but then he'd also have a bow like a hunter, and he could have magic like mages. Like, he'd be super OP. Like, everyone would be Links.
Maybe they could do it as an NPC that you have to face, like the unnamed adventurer, and you're like, whoa, wait, this is guy is Link and he's just disgustingly powerful. And
that would be amazing. I would be totally down for that. But yeah, like most of the stuff, because I don't necessarily want to like change the other games that I play, but it would be really cool to have like skins and stuff in other games. I'm trying to figure out if like I could, if having my WoW characters or characters from WoW, like Jaina in like a skin for Kate in Dead by Daylight.
What about older games that you used to play? Because in my mind, I could think of like Malfurion in Smite as like one of the gods.
Yeah, for sure. Again, like a very, very skin like, I think, you know, putting skins over top of them. But yeah, like something like Smite that pulls from a lot of different areas, then you could definitely, if you could ever get a partnership between the Hi-Rez Studios and Blizzard, right? Because that's what a lot of this stuff boils down to. But it would be really cool to pull from some of our more like godlike characters and put them in Smite for sure.
Yeah, I don't know if I could think of any character that would fit well in Smash Bros, because I feel like WoW is strangely their characters are more diverse in their abilities, and Smash, you would need to like bring it down a lot.
You were gonna say like, dumb it down, weren't you?
no, like, because Smash isn't about being dumb, it's about bringing it to this the core few abilities. Where WoW, because of like, you know, button bloat, we've had so many abilities. Like, how do you bring? I think you'd have to take like the hero version of something, such as like, oh, Thrall from Heroes of Storm being a representative of shamans from WoW, take that and move that to Smash in a way, and that way it would work. not rather than trying to take a shaman kit straight from World of Warcraft, even after all the pruning that they're starting to undo, it still seems like too complicated to exactly put over to Smash. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think.
Yeah, I understand that. Who does our second email come to us from today?
So this second email comes to us from Xander, who submitted this on Discord. And I'm going to paraphrase it a bit here, but he goes on to say, "When I heard about covenants, I thought it was such a cool idea. Pledging your loyalty to one covenant and progressing through them through the whole expansion sounds so awesome. Getting major lore stuff each patch, cool armor and back attachments. I am so on board. Then came the general ability and active ability. Hearing so much negativity from the community is really starting to make me bitter. I feel like people are putting way too much stock in the one ability. At the end of the day, it's only one ability. And on top of that, we will be able to modify that ability through soulbinds to fit different types of gameplay. I am starting to get tired of the whole whatever Sims best mentality people have lately. I think that they are taking such a cool idea, the Covenant system, and ruining it. There are way more classes, there are way more to classes than just one ability. Furthermore, there are so much more to Covenants than just the active ability. RPGs are supposed to be about making choices and meaningful choices. I do not want a world in which we can change our covenants willy-nilly. That defeats the whole purpose of them. The whole point of making a choice is that it's supposed to be hard. That is what makes good gameplay. It's compelling to want more than one, but having to decide what ultimately will be best for you. If one choice was cool and the rest were lame, there wouldn't be much of a choice. What are your thoughts on Covenant, and more specifically, the Covenant abilities?" So there's a lot to unpack there. Mm-hmm. Joss and I had started a little bit on this before, and we had a bit of back and forth. So there's a lot in here. The part that I'm going to focus on first is the Covenant abilities and why there is such a focus on them. Mechanically, Covenant abilities could have the same impact as Azerite armor. Azerite armor was just one piece of the puzzle, but Covenants and Azerite are both borrowed power systems that are going to be, or supposed to be, the linchpin of the expansion.
But with Azerite gear and Azerite powers, there were a lot more potential combinations, right? Like, have they even put soulbinds onto the alpha yet?
We don't know what the soulbinds are on the alpha, okay. So we have no idea what level of combinations there are, whether they are independent abilities or if they modify the Covenant ability or some other other thing.
Right.
We
okay.
don't know.
So we don't know very much about soulbind. So I feel like we almost need to take that out of the conversation for now, because anything that we say about soulbinds, there's no telling what they're actually going to be by the time they get into the game, let alone the final iteration that goes live. So I feel like we need to take that out because we don't know how much we're going to be able to iterate or what soulbinds are going to impact. So, but yeah, like as we know right now, if we're looking at just specifically Covenant abilities, I think Azerite had a lot more combinations potentially. In terms of what you could actually use, you had three different pieces of gear. There were a whole bunch of different modifiers, traits that you could choose. So in the end, everyone would have a different, well, not everybody, but you know what I mean? Like there were many, many, many different combinations of Azerite traits that you could have. And especially after they introduced the neck as well. That I feel like that's a much more complicated system than just here's your covenant and the ability that comes with it.
Yeah, but we're stripping out the soulbinds, and we're just talking
about
the
covenant abilities. Because we don't know how soulbinds are going to work. So we don't know the level of complexity and how much you're going to be able to change the covenant ability.
Yeah. And much in the same way, I want to strip out corruption. I want to strip out the essences, and I want to talk about just Azerite.
Okay.
Comparing it as apples to apples, yes, there are things that can be layered on top of it, like the Covenant abilities, like the essences, but just at its core. The Azerite armor provided abilities, right, that you would be able to switch out. And if there was a huge delta in them, people were getting to the point where they're like, I want to equip this Azerite gear that is 15 item levels higher, but it just does not perform on the same level. This would be, this could be a very similar situation where I want to pick this, but the other Covenant ability performs so much better in whatever situation it is. And obviously the different Covenant abilities might function at different levels in different content. And that's a huge nest to go down that I will cover in a little bit. But just say that you have one thing that you want to play. You want to play Mythic Plus. This Covenant ability performs so much better. And now you are feeling that you should play that ability. There is pressure from the community. There is a sense of duty for yourself or the team that you're running with, or even being able to get into a group, you feel your chances are less with one Covenant or another. That means that you are now torn between making a choice based on your cosmetic values versus your wishes to open up as many doors as possible in your gameplay avenues. Whatever those deltas are, if it is 20% of the community won't take you because you took the second best one, all right? Or it will be that your performance, potential performance, is adjusted because you took the best one, and whatever the values are you have to deal with, that is something that like you have to make as a decision yourself. And the community is currently saying that the math is going to happen. There is no preventing the math.
Yeah.
It will be figured out, right? It would be.
I like that. There's no preventing the math. It is inescapable.
It is inescapable because at the end of the day, all of the systems are math. Blizzard puts the math into the game. All it takes is somebody to figure out the math, and it's already there. It's not the community creating the math. The math is created by Blizzard.
Yeah.
Right?
And we put a lot of faith in them to balance those equations as much as they possibly can, right?
We put faith in them to balance Azerite armor. Like they are human. They make mistakes. We have had conversations about how insane certain corruption is, right? The difference between one Azerite piece to another, the difference between one essence or another. We have had people in our own Discord and all over the internet who talk about like, I don't want to do X content to get this essence, but it is the best in slot. And it's that sort of feel bad mentality, right, that can arise from putting something that will math out to be better, right, against what a player wants to do. Then they feel forced to. And a lot of the content creators are saying, please don't make it a quote unquote have to decision. So that's one camp. The other camp are people who are like, I do not care what one sims out better as right. I just want to dance around the forest as a unicorn. I just want to play.
Manny's speaking directly to my soul right now. I just want to dance around the forest as a unicorn. Right. Yes.
Yeah. I just want to have my wings out as a carrion, and like that's my jam, right? But those people are going to do what they're going to do anyways. They're not affected by this. The core people that are affected by this are the people who are in between. The people who like playing their game with their RP, but also want to do group activities, content, yeah. Right? The people like me, I'm technically one of those in-between guys, right? I'm clearly more biased to one or the other, right? Just like Josh, you are in one of those betweens where you're like, I got to take off my like pink frilly sparkle hat, and I got to put on my serious raid leading hat, and those are two different decisions.
Yeah,
right. So even in this show, we like, even though we're leaning one way or the other, we're still torn between that. And for those people, this is where it's going to be issues. You are going to have to make the decision. And I don't want to say that if you don't take the best, you are bad, or if you don't take what you feel is like most aesthetically pleasing or most fitting with like what you envision your character to be, you are bad, because that is not the truth. They're just different priorities. And the argument that a lot of people are making is that, please just do not make us prioritize one over the other. Let us have the cool cosmetics, the really enriched story, and all those rewards that should be with the covenants and should be enough. And then in a different way, separate out the power gains. The way that the way I wanted to separate this is simply...
I find it's best if I just stay quiet and let Manny talk. Go ahead.
The way that I wanted to separate this was to allow covenants to be everything they are, with one exception. Soulbinds would not be covenant specific, and they would not in any way interact with your covenant abilities. They would be different things that you would be able to pick up by going into the Maw, by going into Torghast, and doing a specific quest and getting that soulbind. You would rescue the soul of...
Insert dude here,
right? And then he would become your soulbind, and he'd be like, thank you, I pledge my allegiance to you, I'll be your soulbind. And anybody from any covenant could find that soul. It would be completely agnostic to your covenant, and that would be where your power is. You would still have the great story, the great customization, all of the cosmetics, but your power would be completely disassociated. For the covenant abilities themselves, I would have them just not active in instance content. And that is something that they have discussed. Or I would really change the abilities that are going on a completely different delta. So we talked about Fleshcraft and how it is the sole DR in a world of movement abilities, right? Two mm-hmm. of them are movement abilities. I would not allow that to be a movement ability, to be anything other than a movement ability, so that they are all at least working on the same pattern.
Right, because right now we've got a whole bunch of abilities that are kind of not giving you any sort of competitive advantage necessarily, and then all of a sudden you come in with a cooldown, and it's just like, hang on a second, that probably shouldn't work like that.
Yeah, and there will be times where... I'm sure there will be different scenarios where you could say for certain that one is better than the other in that situation. But then Blizzard has to make sure that those situations come up often enough that it is not a dead talent and it restricts their design space. And that is a really dangerous road for them to travel on. So it's bad for them. It's bad for the community. It's bad for us. And that's why I personally rally against putting gameplay power locked off in something that you cannot easily switch, because that's where Azerite armor failed. You had yourself locked into a trait, you couldn't easily get a replacement, and you couldn't easily switch it because you had to constantly pay more and more gold to switch between the traits, and it was a really feel bad thing that they had to change on the very next patch, iterate on the patch after that, and then put a bunch of other systems the rest of the expansion through. And that's what I want to avoid with the entire Covenant system.
Yeah, and I do like your idea of taking soulbinds and making them Covenant agnostic, like just pulling them out of the Covenant system completely. But I worry a little bit about what you said about Covenant abilities and making them not useful in... Well, Covenant abilities are the ones that like each class gets one, right? And it's different depending on what class you are.
I'm talking about the signature ability, the one that is not class specific.
Oh,
so Fleshcraft
okay.
is like everything. The ones that are class specific, the second one, I think those are mostly lying around the same thing and can be put to at least make those classes have some sort of utility. And I don't think that you can't have anything be gameplay wise. I just think the more that you stick in one bucket, the more dangerous it is. You just hedge your bets by diversifying, right? If there is a Covenant ability for, let's say, hunters, and it has a weakness, you could have a soul bind that covers that weakness. And in that way, sure, it's modified. If you put it within the same system, well, then you have like pretty much told all hunters that because you have chosen, let's say, Night Fae, you have to have this soul bind, and you've removed choice. And that's a bad thing, right? So I think the more you put into a single basket, the more you are removing choice. All hunters need this ability because it is the top performing thing. If they are going to do X thing, then all hunters that want to do X must be this covenant if they want to perform at the same level. And then that becomes the mentality that trickles down. Mm-hmm. And people who might not have to worry about that kind of consideration feel that they have to. So make it as complicated as you want, right? But the message that goes down usually is a broken telephone thing, and people simplify it to the smallest stuff.
Yeah, because what I was going to say, basically it was just the comment about making it so it didn't work in instance content. And my only problem with that is that there has to be enough to do outside of instanced content so that ability is still relevant and interesting, right? Because if you're turning off a whole bunch of stuff and saying like, okay, here's this super cool thing that we're going to do for the expansion, but you can only use it when you're world questing. And then like, I haven't done a world quest in who knows how long. All that I'm doing now is mythic pluses and raids and PvP. And, you know, like I'm not out in the world anymore. So I don't want something that is expansion specific and supposed to get me excited and be thematically relevant, and you know that I'm gonna want to be like, hey, yay, Covenant, woo! I don't want it to then not work in the game that I'm playing. So if you take stuff out of instanced content, then all of a sudden it's removing it from the majority of my game anyways. I know, you know, there's lots of people that quest and do world quests and stuff, and that's how they play WoW, but for me, so much of it is instanced that I'm just like, I want to still be able to do the cool expansion thing. What do you mean I can't do the cool expansion thing?
Yeah, and it's a balancing act. It's something that they can do. I know it's not something that they're eager to do, but I think about what if the abilities are allowed in, and then instead of Blizzard saying these abilities aren't allowed in, the community goes and says anybody who's not using this ability is not allowed in. Mm-hmm. And that's the sort of the second part that Xander starts going on, is that what happens is that when the theory crafters do things, and if you talk directly to the people who are putting together the math, they will try and get the constants down. They'll be like, okay, the priority for stats is this, and they will list out the priorities, right? But every time that I talk to you guys, I say, this is the general stat priority, but please remember that that stats are synergistic. So the more you get of this, the more it shifts around. So please make sure you sim yourself. And if you go to your class Discord and you say, hey, what's the stat priority? Mostly the Discord people will go and say, sim yourself.
Yeah.
But when you read a article and they can't give you that kind of nuance, they will say, this is what the general stat priority is. And people will take that for gospel. And they'll be like, I need to stack this, then this, then this. And it doesn't matter how much they go, and they could do it to their own detriment. That is the breakdown in communication. I think that WoW has a big tendency in the community to do this. We have seen where it's like, oh, you're not playing X class or X spec of rogues. Well, then you're playing the like suboptimal rogue. And the difference might be very small. But then you have to fight to show that you're valid, the valid version of rogue. Well, they're all actually valid. Just one is better in certain situations than another is. And this tier, right, there's more situations that allow subtlety to be better than outlaw. Or there might be stuff that allows assassination to be better than this. So because the short form of it is not, hey, because we're dealing with a lot of funnel damage, well, in Uldir, this rogue spec is the best. People just go, oh, this rogue spec is the best, and they ignore everything else. But it's like, no, it was only because of this damage profile that that became the best. And as soon as we moved into Mythic Plus or PvP, those situations didn't exist. So the other specs were as good as, if not better. Like, that short form is what's missed. And that's what's the problem with anything that relates to math and the interpretation or the community view of something. There's always talk about, like, what's the best tank and which tank is viable. Well, the truth is they're all viable, and you and I had talked about this before.
Yeah,
they're all viable, right? You can get through things. The only reason that the top rating groups will stack a class is because for a specific fight, right, they will want to use this tank that has a specific way of mitigating damage that allows them to push further or be easier to progress than other things. But the fact is that Method isn't just using one tank. Limit isn't just using one tank. All of their raiders have multiple classes and specs set up, and they will switch them, bench them per fight, and then bring them right back in for the next fight. So if you're not willing to do that, you really need to understand that it is how you play and what you can bring it to the table, not what your spec can potentially bring to the table. Sorry, did you have something to add before I continued?
No. Okay. You go right ahead, Manny. You have, and the other thing is, like, I know that you have been doing a lot of testing. You've been in the alpha. Like, you have a much better understanding of a lot of the different nuances of these abilities. So I'm coming into this conversation a little ill-informed or under-informed, I guess, as opposed to ill-informed. But just, I haven't had a chance to get in there and play around nearly as much as you have. So, and like I say, we don't even know what a lot of these things are going to look like once we actually have soul binds in place. And what, and in the end, I like your suggestion of keeping Covenant's cosmetic and lore focused and taking utility and putting it in there, but keeping straight up power buffs outside of that realm and having you able to go and save people from the Maw regardless of what Covenant you're on. I like that idea. I think that's how I would like it to work, because then, I mean, it does kind of in a way almost feel like essences, right? Except that they're not split up by what's the word I'm looking for? Activities. They're not split by activity in game. So it's not split by, you know, there's one dude you can save if you Mythic Plus. There's one dude you can save if you raid. It's just you have to go into this zone. You have to locate the soul and you have to save them. And then they can do the soul bind thing for you. That's accessible to everybody regardless of your content. And I think that's the way it should be. And then you can just go and get and pick your soul bind and then bring it back to your Covenant. And then there you go. Now you've got your power boost. And I think that that would also have been a good way for essences to work. But obviously they lock those behind different activities. So I think there's a potential for interesting systems, but it's going to be very difficult to counter community mentalities, I guess.
Yeah.
Perceptions is probably a better word.
And I think Xander is right. There are a lot of people who just shorthand it and don't fully explain why things scale the way they scale. When you are doing, just like if I was streaming and somebody was to ask me, like, oh, I'm just starting out on a shaman. Like, what talents should I pick? And I'm like, okay, well, you're starting out on a shaman. You want to really pick stuff that is easy for you, right? Here's like a quick thing. That would be different than if somebody's like, oh, you know, I'm on my shaman. I'm really trying to like get through raiding. Like, what talent should I pick, right? And that would get a different answer from me. depending on the raid that they were doing even. And if somebody's like, I'm trying to PvP, what talent should I pick? Well, that would get a completely different answer from me. Mostly, I don't know, man. You got to ask somebody else. But it would be a different answer. There is context that is lost, as I was saying. But it's on us as critical thinkers to realize that there is context in everything. If you were to go to WoWhead's Guide on Shamans, there is a breakdown on like, these are the talents, this is why this is the best talent, and giving the reasons. There are breakdowns for, this is how you want to set up your Azerite traits, and these are the reasons. There are even different builds, which then will change things. If you go to Raidbot, that'll give you very specific data for yourself. If you go to Blood Mallet, it is not very specific data for yourself. It's based on a template. So the big thing that people miss when they look at raid bots is that they need to look at the template, because the template has very specific armor that it's based on. And if you don't have that armor, certain things aren't going to be as good for you.
Yeah.
Trinkets are different in combination than they are by themselves. They even say at the top as a little asterisk, but people will ignore that asterisk and go chasing after a trinket for forever. And that's the problem that we have when we rank things. People don't understand on what basis we're ranking them on, and then just take that ranking forever. I think that's the bigger issue that you're having, Xander, if I had to boil it down, is that the community doesn't communicate the nuance well enough.
The community doesn't communicate.
Oh no, they communicate. The message gets through, the core message gets through well enough. It gets distorted, but it gets through well enough. It's just that people don't know when to stop listening, because at a heroic level where you and I are at, Joss, right? I've been playing a meme, an absolute meme version of enhancement, and I'm still doing decent DPS. I'm not right up there with some of the people who are really pushing. And then the other day, the essence vendor came up and it had like, oh, my best in slot. I'm like, you know, what can I do if I push it? Right. And my potential DPS, right, went from, I think, 70 something K DPS to 90 something K DPS. That's a huge jump in potential DPS, right? But when I'm raiding with you guys, I'm doing just fine to kill stuff. We cleared it weeks ago. Me doing 90K versus 70K is irrelevant to our progression. And it's irrelevant to a lot of people's progression if they're not pushing for server first or best in guild if you have multiple raid teams, or even if you are trying for world first. Those are different concerns. And if that is a priority for you, you have to make it a priority. If it's not a priority for you and something else is a priority for you, be happy with that. But if you're dealing with a community and the community has different priorities than you, then you have to understand that you have made the choice to go against the community established values, and you have to deal with that. I'm not going to say exactly who, but we have somebody in our raid team that has a armor set, and the armor set is just E-peen, and it is completely unviable, like grotesque amount of corruption. He gets breathed on and he's dead, but he'll use it to get into get an invite because the eye level is enough that people are like, oh dang. And then once he's got the invite, he switches over to an actual viable armor set, right? That's using the lack of nuance of the community against the community. And that is something that I've done in the past. When I was pugging, I'd have like the best armor set, and then it's like, okay, now that they have checked my gear score, now I can switch to something that actually plays properly. Right? It is a fault in the community, but it is something you can work around. I do not believe that people are going to be saying that all rogues have to be a certain covenant, because the specs will respect different abilities to fill in their niches. People are not going to be saying, we need, at least I hope, because again, we're hoping on balancing to be there. People should not be to the point where they go and say, we need a marksman hunter from Bastion and we will not accept a survival hunter from Bastion, or we will not accept a marksman hunter from Revendreth, because then they're trying to track all three different things. And that just seems, again, the community trying to like lose all nuance and make it simple. They're not going to do that. So I think that there's a lot of fear about exclusion that will not come to pass. And at the end of the day, the people who do care about it are not trying to pug to exclude people. They are the people who are like, I'm going to try my best to prioritize this sort of damage and that and this stuff so that I am giving the most to my raid team, or I'm giving the most to my Mythic Plus team. We need to bring somebody in. I need a quick form, shorthand way of saying, is this person going to be able to do the stuff? And if your item level is ridiculous, they're probably going to ignore that you're not at the like exact covenant they want. But if your item level is lower and you're not in the right covenant and you are not in the right spec, that is not just the one thing and the one ability that's working against you. That is multiple choices you have made that have influenced people against choosing you.
Fair enough. So is there a way, like, how do you tell what covenant people are in? Like, if they're not wearing the armor or whatever, like, is there a way in the UI to be like, I am Joss of the Night Fae?
I don't think so. I really do not think so. I don't suspect that Blizzard would put that into the UI. It might be something that you might see an add-on put in. But right now,
third-party websites and add-ons ruining WoW. I'm kidding.
No, there is an argument for that, but that's a different discussion.
That's a different story, yeah.
Yeah. I think that right now we don't know, because we haven't hit endgame content of testing endgame. We just got in the final piece of the leveling, and nobody has been able to play any endgame stuff. I'm not sure if the cap is 60 or if it's still at like 58, 59 right now. So we will have to see as things develop. But there is the concern there. There is the hope that it doesn't prove to be a valid concern. And people are raising the alarm because now is the time to raise the alarm.
Yeah, and I think there's a whole other, and I don't want to go into this too much because we're nearing the end of the show, but I think there's also just a sort of alarmism that goes on in content creation now, where you have to create content where things are either the greatest and most best thing in the universe, or it's the worst thing and it's going to burn down the house and we're all doomed, and there's not a whole lot of nuance and in between there. And so I think like it's getting very difficult for me to take this kind of stuff seriously, because it's just like, oh, well, yeah, but you also doom and gloomed about absolutely freaking everything in WoW ever and said it was going to be the WoW killer and end of the game and blah. And I'm just like, you know what? There's so much bluster in content creation these days that it makes me think that this probably isn't actually a big deal. It's making me take it even less seriously. It's like the more crazy they're going off about stuff, the more I'm just like, you're full of it and don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's the boy who called wolf sort of syndrome. Like, how many times can you go off on it? And I don't want to mention many creators, but there are creators who are like infamous for the like, oh, doom and gloom, everything is bad, I'm going to criticize that, I'm going to put out 20 videos in the week being like, this is the thing that kills WoW, and like, oh, I've stepped away from the game. It's like, well, if you've stepped away from the game so much, why are you still making 20 videos? I'm done with you. There are the people who will say like, oh, everything is great, and it's like, listen, I don't want to call you a Blizzard apologist, but not every move that is made is good.
Is good, so, yeah, it's perfect, right.
Yeah. What I will do is name a few creators that are good about giving balanced feedback. Primarily, Soulbreezy is a YouTuber who is very good about like balancing stuff and looking at like the nuance of that. I would say that you get a very casual opinion, but a very good, like, this is my feeling of it, not whether it is like the end of the world or bad thing. When you talk with Azeroth Roundtable, any episode that's got John, Ben, and Ro, I think that they give a good, like, this is how I feel about it, not that it's the end of the world, but as a casual player, this is what I feel. I think those are good sources to look at. And we try to do that here too.
I would hope that people feel that we bring a balance to the conversation. I would hope we do definitely strive for that. But I hope we also answered your question, Xander. I feel like we talked about it for like 40 minutes. So hopefully we covered all the bases there. Thank you guys both for writing in. Again, you can email fazpodcast@gmail.com or you can hit us up in our Discord. You can find the Discord at bit.ly/fazdiscord. But Manny, where can folks find you if they want to follow up with you after your 40 minutes of Covenant stuff?
So as always, you can find me over on Twitter. That is True Villain Manny, true without the E. Same, you can find me over on Twitch, where I'm streaming every Tuesday and Thursday at 9 Eastern and 6 Pacific. And you can ask me questions and I'll give you a direct answer right then and there. You can also join in on the conversations that we have in Discord, and that is bit.ly/fazdiscord, where we drew these two questions today. And if you have more general comment to give about the show, send us a like over on iTunes and we will definitely read it there. Joss, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter and Twitch. I'm at Joss Plays. That's J-O-C-E Plays. And if you'd like to find our show notes, head on over to tgistudios.com/faz and you can find the archives of all our old episodes. That's going to do it for us this week. Thank you guys so much for listening.
And until next time, guys, may all your hits be crits.